Rabbi Rebbeinu Tam now. Rebbeinu Tam lived from 1100 to 1171. His real name?
Rebbeinu
Tam. Rebbeinu Tam. I hope you've heard of Rebbeinu Tam.
I spoke about him today.
He spoke about him today. Okay. Rebbeinu Tam lives from 1100 to 1171. That's where Rebbeinu Tam lived. Does anyone know his name?
His name's not Tom.
No, his name was not Tom. So his name Tom and Rebbeinu Tam is not short for Thomas.
Yes, it's the father of somebody.
No.
Son of.
Rebbeinu Tam's name was
Shumas Meiser.
Rebbeinu Tam's name was Yaakov.
What? How's that remotely close?
How is that remotely close to Tom? Okay. There you go. That felt that when you got right. Rebbeinu Tam was called Rebbeinu Tam because his name was Yaakov and Yaakov is Tom. Okay. His father's name was Meir. Meir, the one who married Rashi's daughter Yocheved. Rebbeinu Tam and the Rashbam were brothers. That is so crude. We'll get there in a minute. Maybe we'll just wait a second.
Wait. Rebbeinu Tam's daughter married Rashi.
So Rashi had three daughters.
Okay.
Right, no. One of them married Meir. One of them was Yocheved.
Right.
And she married Meir.
She worked for them.
What? There is no proof anywhere that Rashi's daughter's word is filling.
Just a man.
That is Jewish urban legend, about 150 years old, not more, that Rashi's daughter's word is filling. Anyway, one of Rashi's daughters married somebody by the name of Meir.
And they had
three sons. Shmuel.
Who's Meir?
Meir
Tam's son?
No, Meir is Rebbeinu Tam's father. Shmuel, Yitzchak,
and Yaakov.
Okay. Shmuel is known as the Rashbam.
Of course.
Yitzchak is known as the Rivam.
I knew that. Oh, they have three famous sons. They're all made of the Tosos.
Well, the Rashbam didn't really make up Tosos. And Yaakov's name was
Rebbeinu
Tam.
Right.
Okay, there you go.
It's quite a temperature.
This Meir guy, when that guy is his rabbi, was he of any significant importance to our
junior? He was a scholar, but he was not not as significant as his sons.
Mainly Rashi's grandchildren.
Say again?
Main authors of Tosos were Rashi's grandchildren.
We'll see.
Yaakov get the name of Rebbeinu Tam.
Yaakov Ish Tam.
Yaakov Ish Tam.
Okay. Rabbi, a question. Who were Rashi's other daughters?
Okay. Rashi's other daughters did not have as many famous children. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to, maybe we'll get to one of them in a moment, but I have to look back at my notes. Okay. Now.
Didn't they write any famous farm?
No, not really. He had a yeshiva.
Who did it?
Meir. And Shmuel. And last week I promised you I'll find that house in a place by the name of. So I asked a French guy today how you pronounce this city. He says he's never heard of it. He says it's not difficult. He thinks it's Ram Rupt, but he's not 100% sure.
It's still American.
No. So I asked him about, you know, how you pronounce it. We'll get there maybe at the end of the share. How do you pronounce this in French? And he said, you do pronounce the S. So I asked him, what about Paris, which the Balachos is clearly pronounced, and Orleans, which the Balachos is also clearly pronounced, because that's how they wrote it. So he agreed with me that there's no real rule. He says French pronunciation is sort of like English spelling. There's no ironclad rules in it.
It's where Rashi lived.
Rashi lived in Israel. He's Rashi lived in Troy.
You know where it's
Worms. Worms.
Worms was about 100 miles away from it, but that was where the yeshivas were in Rashi's day.
Do you know where his cavern is?
Yes. I believe we do, yes. I've not been zealous to go there, but I believe we do.
Where is it?
It's in Troy's. Okay, now it's only an item. So, again, so we have Rabbeinu Tam. We're now by Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam is very important because he started Tosfos. He started Tosfos. That's Rabbeinu
Tam. In other words, Rashi really argues with his grandson.
Rashi, the other way around. Rashi's grandsons argue with him. And this is a classic.
What?
This is a classic example.
And when was Rashi born?
Rashi is
1040.
Rashi is
1040.
He died 1040.
He died 1040.
Rashi is 1040 to 1105. That's what I would have for Morning Shiur at school. Okay. Great. That's what's important about Rabbeinu Tam.
Imagine what happens.
And then this is a classic example of what the pasuk says in Mishlei.
Can't read that.
Tzadik harisha b'riva uva re'ehu l'chakara. That's the pasuk in Mishlei. Tzadik, my handwriting is terrible. Tzadik harisha b'riva means the first one. I mean, is a tzaddik is right kiva, but you could like I'm playing, making a pun here, making a rabbinical pun. Tzaddik Arisha, the first one may be a tzaddik, and his argument, the way he's wording up, it doesn't mean toes over. We have to come that his rei, his friend, comes and has to investigate. So that's what Rashi's community did to him. They investigated everything he said. And they didn't agree with a lot of it. But that's Torah. Kachi Darkish al Torah. It's Voya Bezufa. That's Kachi Darkish al Torah. Say again? The Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam were brothers. But they were brothers, but they're very different. The Rashbam is a Parshan. This way is Eli Wezmeh. The Rashbam is a Parshan. He explains Shas similar to his grandfather. He's not using Tosis' approach. Rabbeinu Tam starts the Baalei Tosfos. What is the Baalei Tosfos? What were the Baalei Tosfos doing?
Does he have
Rabbeinu Tam?
Yeah.
No, Rabbeinu. Wait. We'll get there. Pay.
It's like the yeshiva, no?
The yeshiva is going to be a little bit later. What does Rabbeinu Tam do? Now I say. Wait. I hold that the Baalei Tosfos started the most important open, what I would term, intellectual revolution that ever happened in Torah. It is the most important. It's a new era. It's a new era and a new start in a certain sense of learning. In a similar fashion, now this is my own opinion, so I'll take credit for it whether you like it or not, or you don't like it or dislike it. I hold what the Tosfos did to Shas in their day is similar, that we can conceptualize it in a similar fashion to what Reb Chaim Soloveitchik did to Lumdus in more modern terms.
No.
In Musar, I would say Rabbi Saul Salanter did something to Musar in a conceptual fashion similar to what Rabbi Chaim did to Lumbus. But that's okay, that's a different. Not now. I don't know if we can get that far. So what did they do? What did they do? The Baalei Tosfos, and starting with Rabbeinu Tam, openly looked at Shas as a unit. Now, Shas itself does that for the records. It's not, in other words, it's not. When we say it's new, and I say it's an intellectual revolution, it's true, because they clearly set out ideas which in the past were lying in the background. Again, the Meiri and others point out, and Ramdanim will show you consistently, if you consistently look at Rashi answers Tosfos' questions way too many times to tell me it's a coincidence. We have no question that Rashi was aware of Tosfos' problems. There's no question that Rashi was aware of it. But with Rashi, I mean, there's two things. One is qualitative, that you can't put together a cohesive approach to sugyas and shas just with Rashi. All we had was Rashi. Without Tosfos, we would not be able to do it. Not with enough certainty that we know what we're doing. That's one. So Tosfos is doing two things. He's bringing things more to the open, which Rashi had not done. Even though, again, we see Rashi is aware of way too many times for us to think that it's a coincidence. And two, it's comprehensiveness. How much did Rashi? In other words, you have Rashi in the sugya. You have a piece of the puzzle. You have like small piece of the puzzle here, a small piece there, a small dot there, a small dot there, and a small dot there. So it's not enough to put the sugya together. Because Tosfos came and blows everything open, and he's not just analyzing Rashi's 5 or 6 points. He will talk clearly about the entirety of the sugya, and then after we comprehend and understand the sugya from what Tosfos did, then we see that all those 5 or 6 or 8 times that Rashi is, you know, very, very carefully saying what he said, we see that Rashi definitely knew what he was doing. We're not doubting Rashi knew what he was doing, but we don't have access to really understanding a sugya in a real fashion just from what Rashi wrote. And a different way to say this is Tosfos illustrates methodology. That's what I say in Chumash. You know, there's a very well-known mimer, which I don't know if I said this to who. It's hard. I've said it so many times. Can't remember who I've said it to by now. But I said it to someone last night. Even I know that was 2 nights ago. Maybe that was in the Mir Yeshiva, possibly. Okay. People of Lithuanian extraction say the father say back. I'm going to say a statement which both Lithuanians say. Lithuanian Jews, Lithuanian scholars saying the name of Reb Chaim Volozhin, and Hungarian scholars say the same thing in the name of the Chassam Sofer. And that is, Tosfos completes Rashi on Shas. The Rabban in Chumash does a conceptually equivalent thing. He completes Rashi on Chumash. I've seen this exact statement both attributed to Reb Chaim Volozhin and the Chassam Sofer.
Was he related?
They weren't related, and there was not that. They were around the same time, and there was not that much contact between the two of them. So I don't believe that one plagiarized it from the other. Unlike I saw in the JPS piece of trash. They translate something. They translate a pasuk and tell it a certain way, and then they have a note. So, or you could read it this way. Now, the way that JPS is Jewish Publication Society, printed by JTS. Or you could learn it this way. Now, the second way they're learning is Rashi. Now, I hold there's no way they could have come up with that shot without Rashi, and I openly accuse them of plagiarism.
Really?
I know Rashi, and there's no way they could have come up with that shot without Rashi. There's nothing wrong quoting Rashi, no? Anyway, the point is I always say, the Rabban is the Rebbe of Limud HaMikra. You know, Rashi's great, he's unbelievable, but he doesn't teach you how to break down a pasuk and how to analyze a midrashim and how to think and how to work, and you can say this, no, this doesn't work because of that. That's what the Rabban does. Tosfos does the same thing in Shas. He shows methodology. Now, again, now another facet or look at what did Tosfos do? And this is like, now I'm going to tell you what Tosfos did and then throw my own 2 cents and personal feelings in. The meat and guts of Shas is Shakavataria. That's the meat and guts of Shas. And I hope we're aware of that. But that is the real guts. That's what Shas is doing. It's Shakavataria. Question, answer. Question, answer. That's what's doing in Shas. Now, I once had, years ago, it's hard to remember when, I put it at least 10 years ago, closer to 15, maybe even pushing 20 now. I had a fellow over at my house who was a Shabbos guest. Years ago, I used to have Shabbos guests over from Mayor Schuster, Jeff Seidel. What we call scraped door, scraped right off the wall. So I had this fellow over who was a professor of Jewish studies in some university whose name I forgot in northern Ontario. Okay? So anyway, he was telling me one part of the key parts of his program is he wants to teach the guys, people who go through his program, not the guys, whoever signs up. He wants to teach them how, a little bit how you learn a Daf Gemara. Yeah, he's an interesting person. He was a very interesting person. I don't remember his name. It was Shabbos. I couldn't, you know, he was Jewish, so I certainly couldn't ask him to write his name down. Relative, whatever, it's complicated. Not for now. I'll tell you more about that later. Anyway, so he told me, and this is a fact, once he got, anyone who stayed with his classes enough, that they, you know, he taught him the basics of learning Gemara. He said that the students, whoever did it, were always like really into it. Like, well, this is really interactive. Because that's the guts of Shas is Shat Kavataria. The guts of Shas is Shat Kavataria. And by nature, Torah is supposed to be alive. Torah is supposed to be alive. When you learn a sugya properly, it's not dead. You know, that's why you go into Beis Midrash. The Beis Midrash has a hum, or it should have a hum. It's not supposed to be a library, it's supposed to be quiet. Because you need to do analysis quietly. Because you're not, it's not alive. Torah is alive, it's a live thing. And that's what we say, ki hein chayenu v'orach emeinu. Torah is mamash alive. Now, one of the things Tosas did is it kept Torah alive. They added in their own echoing Shas. Shas has the Shakavataya. Tosas has their own Shakavataya. Based on the sugya and the other sugyas, which revitalizes and keeps Shas alive in a real way. That's what Tosas did. Now I tell you now, the Shas in Midrashim, we of course can be medayik them, and we definitely try very hard to. But there's too much of a gap between us and Shas. For us, at least I can talk my own personal experience. I can't. It's not that I don't think Shas is alive. I do think it's alive, but I don't feel it in a real way. Tosas, especially. I'm not going to talk tonight about Tosas Ivru and Rabbeinu and the most well known Talmud of the Tosas Ivru was Rabbeinu Peretz. That's going to be. I'm sorry. I know. I'm going to talk about that in about four or five weeks. We get back to those Tosas, because the Rambam's going to take a long time. I think the Rambam's going to take me 3 weeks. But I'm not sure, because the Rambam's so controversial. It's not my fault the Rambam's controversial. We'll get more back to talking about this. We talk about the Tosas of Rub. But Tosas is alive, and I personally can say myself that I can see and feel Tosas in a live way, in a way that you see, you know, you see there's someone there doing something in a real fashion, in a way that I honestly can tell you, I can't do that quite in Shas. I can't. I mean, I think we're too small and too far away from it to do it. Okay. Now, as we also know, I've said this also many times to a lot of different people, but say it over here because this is part of this definitely fits in over here. There's another very fundamental difference between Rashi and Tosas. What Rashi did is what you call in Shas slang, shavu v'chol nefesh. Rashi produced something which everyone can relate to wherever they are. Doesn't matter where you're holding, Rashi's going to talk to you. Rashi, and that's part of the greatness of Rashi. I spoke about that 2 weeks ago. That's Rashi. Tosus is not shavu v'chol nefesh. Tosus is not something which appeals to everyone at all levels. Tosus is intellectually demanding. And I actually was schmoozing with Rabbi Goldman about the issue some time ago, and he said, yeah, Tosas is elitist. Tosas expects you to be holding deeply in the sugya, and you're not going to appreciate what the Tosas is doing until you're holding in the sugya. So that's why, you know, it's like I was reading a book written by a secular Jewish historian who's like, they tell me he's like traditional. They tell me he's traditional.
I did my research.
I didn't do final research on the person, but I did some research on him. He's traditional. And I could see that he was able to relate to Rashi. But Tosas had a total intellectual revolution in Torah and completely changes, this is not my opinion, the Ramban says it, and it completely changes what Torah looks like, ki'ilu. He missed that. But I'm not surprised, because what do you want? I'm sure this person, I don't know if he ever learned to tell this properly, but if he did, it was so long ago, he forgot about it. Because again, Tosus takes a lot of work and effort.
Okay.
Now, wait a second. Now, Tosus is not so easy to learn and read. The king of difficult to read and Rishonim is the Ramban. I'm not sure how familiar we are with the Ramban. The Ramban, whether it's on Chumash, whether it's on Shas, Hatzad Shava.
The language,
the style. The Ramban's style is like sort of choppy. Really? I mean, that's not really nice to say, but it's not. It doesn't flow so smoothly. It's not like Rashi is just like, you know, Rashi is the king of smoothness. Maybe his only competitor might be the Rambam. That's his maybe only competitor. Tosfos is just not as smooth, especially after I hope we get there today. We might. Especially after we get to the later Bali Tosfos and thought that the early Tosfos were too long, so they edited them down, they made it harder really to understand Tosfos. And as a result of this, the Maharal and others thought that maybe we shouldn't print Tosfos on the page on the Daf Gemara. You know, we have Gemara Rashi Tosfos, and every single Shas is not printed like that. There were other Shas and printed some Shas and had the Rush printed like 500 years ago, and we get to that period of time, maybe we'll talk about it. Some of the Shas had the Rush printed, and some even had the Ritva printed. Could you imagine Gemara Rashi Ritva? That'd be a lot easier than Gemara Rashi Tosfos, wouldn't it? It would be. Trust me. You don't have that much experience with it. Trust me. The Ritva is a lot smoother. It's a lot smoother than Tosfos. I mean, you want to know my opinion?
Anything in Hebrew to us is not smooth.
Bezer Hashem, you'll understand what I mean as you progress in the morning. Now, and you want to know why I say, you want to know why, what's the wise Tosfos on the page? You know why Tosfos on the page?
Because
Tosfos invented the methodology. They're the ones who invented that style of thinking, and therefore we don't have a choice. We have to learn Tosfos.
I was going
to
say that because of the Gaish of printers.
No. We cannot say that. No, to be more practical, is like this. You want me to be practical?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll be practical. Practically, you want to know why Tosfos is on the page? Because no other Rishon, the Rishonim didn't write on the entire Shas from Brachos all the way till Nida. The only one who did was Rashi and Tosfos. There are in Kutchim. What?
Rashi.
Okay, he missed two Masechta. He missed most of Basra and ended up Psachim. And he didn't miss Tainus, but we lost Rashi and Tainus, found it later. But whatever, fine.
Right.
But Rashi really is comprehensive on Shas. Tosfos is comprehensive on Shas.
Why isn't Tosfos in the Dharm?
There is Tosfos in the Dharm. It's on the side. You can't from one Masechta, not like, in other words, we have all the Shas minus one Masechta. That's not called not comprehensive. The Ritva, even the Ritva, which is relatively comprehensive, Not as much as we don't have on all.
So why do we have the Ran on the side of the Daf in the Dharam and not Tosfos?
Why is the Ran on the side of the Daf in the Dharam instead of Tosfos? The answer is what's printed in the Dharam under Rashi's name is not Rashi. And all I can tell you is when Rashi ain't Rashi, Tosfos is not Tosfos either. that's a yeshivish joke, but I'm going to tell you, in the Dharam, you learn the Dharam and know what I'm talking about. Rashi's not Rashi, Tosfos is not Tosfos.
What do you mean?
What's printed in Rashi on Rashi's name in Tainus is not Rashi. It's Rivon. I'm not sure. I think it's Rivon, but I'm not mama sure.
Do they write it as Rashi?
It doesn't say that, but people in the know that.
I'm saying, why did they quote it as Rashi then?
Tosfos doesn't quote it as Rashi.
No,
that's the whole point.
You open up a Gemara.
That's a hard question, which no one knows exactly. In other words, it was printed as Rashi, and I mean, as in Tainus, Tosfos quoting Rashi is not quoting what we have. One would think it's relatively evident that what's printed on Rashi's name is certainly not Rashi, so I don't know, I'm not sure. I didn't do research on it, so I'm not sure.
By Tosfos, sometimes he writes in, and sometimes not, but he writes in a lot of brevity. Is there a reason why he wrote like that?
Tosfos?
Yeah.
It's considered another one. Have you ever tried to read something Victorian in Victorian English?
Probably not.
Okay. So I recommend you try to read something Victorian English and after
any suggestions?
I don't think I have to look at it. I once had in my house, what was the book? It was called, you've heard of Captain Cook?
Yeah.
Captain Cook's the guy who discovered Australia. Oh. So I once had a journal, a guy wrote about it. And one of the participants. No, it wasn't one of the participants. It was a Victorian person working together, all this guy's stuff.
Dickens Victorian?
No, Dickens is pre-Victorian. Victorian era is 1860 to 1900.
That sounds like...
Dickens is much earlier. Dickens is Georgian. I enjoy books like this. If they're written well, and they say that its time it was considered written well, but I can tell you is I couldn't do it. I'll give you a different example. Not even that old. That's it. I don't know if I can remember the guy's name right now. Whatever. There's a famous Civil War historian who wrote his most famous book is called Lee's Lieutenants. I can't remember his name right now. I'm interested in Civil War history. I grew up in the South, so I'm interested in Civil War history. That's part of growing up in the South. If you grow up in
War history,
but see, the thing is, in the South, it's normal. I'm not Chas v'Shalom excusing him, being normal in the South.
If you ignore this, like we won, forget
about
it.
My grandmother's from the South.
Where's your grandmother from?
Georgia.
I know, yeah, well, there you go.
I was in Richmond. We went to this bookstore half the day. More shelves towards the Civil War than any other.
The Civil War is alive. My point is if you read something, you ever read any of Churchill's books on the Second World War?
No.
Churchill wrote books on the Second World War?
Churchill, yeah, he wrote on the First and Second World War. His most famous line is after he lost the election, after the Second World War, he says most, maybe his most famous line. He says, you beat me. You should leave the past to history, especially as I plan to be writing that history.
So you lost the election after World War II.
Say again.
He lost an election after World War II.
Yeah.
You know what?
Churchill lost the first election after World War II.
Yes, no, he lost the first election after the Second World War.
They didn't really demonstrate him why.
I can explain it to you, but not now. General Shabbos, no problem. I can explain Churchill. Anyway, he's hard to read also, and he was the highest paid journalist in England in 1900. So styles change, and the fact that the Rambam and Rashi wrote with brevity and clarity, that's why we're still able to understand it. That also shows you the liveness of Torah. Anyway, let's go on.
Okay. So they wrote with brevity to avoid the fact that styles change.
I'm not sure. They wrote brevity and clarity in order to, because that is the recommended way to write in Hebrew and Torah, as you should know from one of the Gemaras in the beginning of Pesachim. La'om Ishana Adam L'Tamid of Derech Katzara.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Vayter. I really at least want to get the end of the rest of Rabbeinu Tam and the Re. Okay. Rabbeinu Tam, according to Art Scrolls, was a wine merchant. I did not find confirmation of that.
Rabbeinu Tam was a wine merchant.
Rashi definitely was. Rashi, everyone knows. Rashi definitely was a wine merchant. And as I saw they say that Rabbeinu Tam was also. I'm not sure if it's true though, because just seeing him in a wine and say, well, I think they might not be right. Maybe he started out as a wine merchant. But wine being working in wine is like I think the medieval equivalent of accounting. And what I mean by that, means if you know what you're doing, there's not only Jews involved. Accounting, if you know what you're doing, you can work 8 weeks a year and make a full salary. You have to be very good and know what you're doing. What?
April.
That's right. You have to know what you're doing, and you have to be really good at it. And if you do, I know many more than one accountant who works 8 or 10 weeks a year, and the rest of the year they're free and they make a full salary. Okay? Yeah, no, you have to really be good to do that, though. I mean, you can't plan necessarily your career, but I know more than one person who's done that. So that's mamish by definition in this column, Nakia. And wine is a similar thing. Wine is seasonal. And Libby Omerly, that the people who really knew what they were doing were able to make a significant, able to make their own living without having to put extended long-term effort in. And that's apparently why Rashi and possibly Rabbeinu Tam at least started out. Yes, Rashi is definitely a wine merchant. Okay. Now, what the other thing Rabbeinu Tam did, and there's no question, he's mentioned it in Shas, not in Shas, in the Mordechai and other poskim many times as being involved in this, was he was a banker. As I mentioned last week, at that point in time, the Catholic Church Asard forbade Christians from taking ribbis, charging interest from one to another, but they were allowed to take interest from Jews. Mm. Now, that led to complications, of course, as you could figure out yourself, because as everyone says, people love borrowing money, but they don't like paying it back. From my research, contrary to what many people believe, it was not like, you know, it was not loan shark rates, it was normal rates, 10, 15, you're not talking about normal rates. It was not loan shark rates.
10% is normal?
In those days, yeah, definitely. In a business loan, absolutely. Yeah. Short-term business loan, 10, 15% is normal. You should, whatever. Now, on mortgages, much lower rate, but that's working in a very different way. There's much less risk involved in mortgages, or there's theoretically less risk involved in mortgages. And I know what happened, and I know the economic crisis relatively well in America. I'm sorry, okay, whatever. So Rabbeinu Tam definitely is mentioned many, many times in Shas as being involved in this, because ribbis does involve a lot of deep, very difficult questions, and there's no question that that was his main source of parnassa for most of his life. Now, it's true that he was around in the Second Crusade, but that is true. But the Second Crusade, which was in 1147, was not nearly as significant as the first one, because the Jews knew there was going to be problems, and definitely in a place like France, they didn't want anything to happen to their economic system, so they made sure, more or less, to take care of the Jews. The same thing actually was true in Germany. The Second Crusade and later Crusades, the Jews did not suffer nearly as much as they did in the First Crusade. Okay, now let's go on to the Re Hazaken, to the Re.
Is that in relation to the Rashi?
Yes, it is, absolutely is. The Re is the guy mentioned in Tosfos, is Omari, 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 Omari. That's that guy. Okay, how does the Re work? I don't know, it's like this. There was a fourth child, girl, don't know what her name was. Let's call her
girl.
Leah.
This is
Yocheved is Rashi's daughter. Leah, let's call her Leah. Rashi's granddaughter.
So it's Rashi's great-grandson.
I don't know who he married, but she has a son. His name is Yitzchak.
Another grandson.
Great-grandson. Nephew of the Rebbeinu Tam and the Rashi.
Do you know if they ever came in contact with each other?
What? And the Rebbe?
Did the Re ever come in contact with any of
them? Yes, he absolutely did. The Re definitely knew Rebbeinu Tam. He knew his uncles.
He
absolutely knew his uncles. The Re was from 1120 to 1200. And Rebbeinu Tam was from...
So he was 21.
Rebbeinu Tam. I gave Rebbeinu Tam's dates.
Rebbeinu
Tam was 1100 to 1171.
So he was 20 years old.
That's right.
When did the Re die?
The Re died around 1200.
So he's a little younger than his uncles.
That's right. Okay, so.
He also lived in France?
He also lived in France. This is where he lived in France.
So it's Rashi's granddaughter's son.
That's right. Rashi's great grandson, via Rebbeinu Tam's sister's son. Okay, isn't that that's a pretty impressive family there, isn't it?
Yes.
Unbelievable. They like one little family. They totally between the three of them. Torah's never been the same. Okay, Rebbeinu Tam. I mean, the Re is the co-founder of Tosfos, and in a certain historical sense is more important than Rebbeinu Tam. People, you have to be very. Rebbeinu Tam was a well-known genius. And there are statements about Rebbeinu Tam which are like unbelievable. For example, There's a famous statement about Rabbeinu Tam saying that he was the greatest Baal Svara, the greatest mind, just wait a second, to hit Judaism since Chasimus HaShas. And they don't say it about many other people. I think we'll be able to get everything in today. Everything that I wanted to get in today. So just wait a second. We'll get there in a minute. The Re has importance that Rabbeinu Tam doesn't have. The Re, Rabbeinu Tam was, again, maybe somewhat of a wine merchant, but much more of a banker. The Re was a Rosh Yeshiva. And he had a yeshiva at Bompe. And legendarily had maintained 60 Talmidim, that each one was an expert in one Masechta of Shas. This is legend. It's brought by the Rashbats. It's brought by a late Ashkenazi Rishon, someone who lived around in the late 1300s. So it's not what's called, on one hand, I wouldn't call that contemporary, absolute historical proof that this, what we call legend, is true. On the other hand, you have to understand that 250-300 years in those days was not such a long time. That's about 200, it's not even 200 years, 150 years. 150 years is not that long in the medieval era. It's not nearly as long as today. So I would not even call it legend. I would call it probably true, but we don't have what's called, absolute proof that this concept. This is a well-known thing. He had 60 Talmidim, each one knew one Masechta, and therefore whenever he said it, whenever they discussed a sugya, then someone in one of the different Masechtas was able to, be on top of those issues. Yeah?
What was the period after Amoraim?
Amoraim, Savaraim, Gaonim.
Which Savaraim?
We spoke about Savaraim briefly. They're very mysterious. No one knows that much about it. 9 o'clock, I'll explain it to you. I'm happy to explain it to you at 9 o'clock.
And what?
Gaon? Gaon. Yeah. Yes. Ellie?
The question of the manuscripts.
Okay, manuscripts. Okay. So let's go on. Let's go on. So the Re is important because I hope we're aware that the person Tosis quotes most after Rabbeinu Tam is the Re. And in terms of creating a system, say again? After Tosis quotes mostly Rabbeinu Tam, and then the Re. That's what people say. I would have to ask. There's people you can ask to see if they agree with that statement.
When you say Tosis, you mean
we're about to get to some patience. Okay. Now, well, I'm going slightly out of historical order. I really should go to the Rambam now, but because I want to finish the first half of the Tosis era, we're going to go on to someone who is not quite as important. Rabbeinu Tam and the Re started the school of thought, and the methodology was down from them. But there was no one who had written anything down comprehensively in a normal way. The person who did that is called the Rosh. His name was Rabbeinu Shimshon ben Avraham. The Rosh. He was from a city which is written. Did I write it here? Yes. This is the city. Sons. Actually, they say Sons. That's how they say it in French now. And in Hebrew, it's always called Shans. It's always called Shans. The importance of the Rosh. It's very nice that we had Rabbi Tam and the Re. They started a whole intellectual revolution, but it would have been lost if someone wouldn't have written down accurate.
Rosh is the one who wrote it down.
The Rosh. Now, Tosus always calls him something else. Tosus calls him
Rashba.
Because his name is Reb Shimshon ben Avraham. We don't call him Rashba. You know why?
Because he didn't call himself Rashba.
No. Now he lived, look.
He lived 1150, that's right. To
we don't call him Rashba.
No, we don't. To 1230.
So we're
different Rashba.
Because we call the Rashba Reb Shlomo ben Aderes. Reb Shlomo ben Aderes, who's from Spain, from about, just this is like my guess here, from about 1250 to 1320. about, that's my guess, maybe 1230 even, 1230 to 1300 minutes.
That's the guy who came later with the name.
Yeah, later. He's the one who we call, talk about Rajba. We're talking about the Sephardi Mishan Rajba. Tosus talks about Rajba. They're talking about what people, what Lavdan call the Rash, to make life easy. Now, what he did again, what the Rash did was very important, is he wrote things down. We have Tosus Rash, at least on two Masechtas that I know of offhand. One of them is?
Sachim.
Have anyone quoted the Rash, Tosus Rashba to you guys?
Yeah.
Tosus Rashba, yes, Tosus Rash. Okay, another Masechta we have it on is Ksuvus. That's another Masechta we have Tosus Rashba on. The Tosus Rashba are usually longer and a little more extensive than our Tosus, and as I'm sure you have noticed if you have used it in Sachem. Yes, no? No, you didn't quite notice? Okay. How do we clearly...
It's early in the morning when we do that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Okay. That's not the recorder issue.
Unfortunately, it is. Okay. But no one knows who said it. There are two ways we can clearly identify the Rash, Tosus Rash. I mean, you understand that we see a manuscript and it has a title on it, that doesn't necessarily mean that's who wrote it. I mean, it might be, but it might not be. So how do we know Vadai that we have Tosus Rash? There's two ways. One way is the Tosus Rash refers to the Re as Rebbe, or Mori. And where Tosus calls him the Rash calls him Rebbe. That's one. The two is things that our Tosus quote in the name of the Rashba, the Rash in his own Tosus says, Venerali, etc. So those are the two clear ways. They're also longer and more extensive. Those are the ways you identify the Tosus of the Rash. Okay, this is how Tosus came to be written. The Re and Rebbe Tam had their Chidushim. Some of Rebbe Tam's Chidushim, not all, but a large amount of them, he did write down in something called Sefer HaYashar. Sefer HaYashar, Yashar, like straight. If they don't have it in the Beis Midrash downstairs, we could all go make a mass protest to Rabbi Miller and tell him it's embarrassment to the Beis Midrash that they don't have Sefer HaYashar.
We keep saying that on Kino, so it doesn't change anything.
Yeah, no, but this is okay.
Is anyone here during Tisha B'Av?
No, people are there.
You need one Kinos for reference.
Because I'm sure if they do have a call.
It's not in any of those watching
in the back. No, Kinos is always have. Okay. So again, the Rebbe Tam did write some of his stuff down. The Re didn't write that much down, but he had a faithful Talmud, the Rash, who wrote a lot of it down. Probably the Rash wrote Tosas and all of Shas, but we can't prove that. We're just going to say that it's very probable and likely because that's what he was trying to do. The Rash was synthesized what Rebbe Tam and the Re did with his own ideas, and of course Kachu Darko Shel Torah. Torah is never static, so the Rash, in a very subtle fashion, developed it his way. Now, later Tosasin, and we're going to get into this more later, I'm going to skip this now again, we get back to Tosas Evrut, then we're going to talk about that when we get to our Tosasin, because there is another school of Balik Tosasin called Tosas Evrut. Tosas Evrut lives a little after the death, they live from like 1220 to 1250, 1260, they're very important, and we're going to get there, we're first going to have to go talk about Sephardi Jewry for a little while. And then after that, then we'll come back to explain how Tosus has got more or less gotten to their present form. But the basic idea is that the Tosus have their approach to sugyas and shas, and the Rash put it down as much as he could. Okay, just to finish the Rash off properly, the Rash also wrote a perish on Mishnayos. Now, I saw some people claim that he really wanted to write a parish on all Mishnayos. I don't see any way to substantiate that, and I'm extremely skeptical. The reason why I'm skeptical is, what did the Rash write on that we have? He wrote on Zeroyim and Tyrus. He wrote on Zeroyim and Tyrus. Now, In Zroyim, there's only one Masechta that has Gemara. Does anyone that has Bavli? Does anyone know Zroyim? Brachos. Okay? Tyrus, similarly, there's one Masechta that has Gemara. Anyone know which one that one is? Neither. Okay. Now, the Rosh did not write a Perish either on Brachos or Neither. And that leads one to believe that the what was moving the Rosh to write his Perish on Mishnayos was not that he wanted to be like the Rambam, write a Perish on Mishnayos. The Rambam wanted to write a Perish on Mishnayos. We'll speak about that. The Rambam wanted to write a Perish on Mishnayos. The Rosh wanted to write on a Perish for the Mishnayos that there's no Shas Bavli for. And that's why the two Masechtas that there are Shas Bavli, we don't have the Rosh's Perish on Mishnayos.